Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Pei Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Pei Gimel. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance at the side where you see our Nosei heading, the topic heading, which we indicate lasts till Omid Beis, with the Mivneh structural note combined. The diamonds will highlight Piskei Halacha Shel Rabbi Yossi, and these Piskei Halacha means halachic rulings that follow the opinion of Rabbi Yossi that's found in different Tanaic sources. And the double underline highlights the names Rav and Shmuel. There are Muvaim Al Yedei Rav and Shmuel. These various Piskei Halacha halachic rulings are presented by Rav, two presented by Rav, and two presented by Shmuel. The topics that will be featured involves the androgynous, the topic that we saw in our Mishnah about the androgynous enabling his spouse to eat from Truma, and in our previous shiur we indicated that the Mishnah reflected the opinion that the androgynous was a definite male. Another topic involves Harkova. Harkova is grafting trees before the Shemitah year. Planting, we'll see a Tanaic source that deals with planting and grafting before the Shemitah year. The third topic involves Koshi. Koshi is a very rather detailed topic that it's unlikely that we'll be able to get into much by way of detail. It's elaborated upon quite extensively in Maseches Nida, but it has to do with a woman who gives birth in a situation where prior to the birth she had been experiencing a blood flow. Generally speaking, when you're dealing with women folk, blood flows will result in some form of tuma, of defilement. However, if the blood flow can be associated with the imminent birth, then that blood flow will not be the source of defilement. That's the topic of Koshi. And the fourth topic is called Kiddush. That's the term the Gemara uses. This has to do with Kilayim, where a person places his grape vine branches over the grain growing in his friend's field. So a person takes his vines and places it all over the grains of his friend. What effect does that have in terms of Hilchus Kilayim? As we said, the double underlinings highlight Rav and Shmuel. The diamonds introduce the sugyas. Note that this marking scheme will continue on Omid Beis, where diamonds are going to be used again to highlight the very same topics, and the double underline used to highlight Rav and Shmuel. So now we turn to the Gemara text, 10 lines from the top. Amri Bei Rav Mishmei Derav. The term Amri Bei Rav is a term that in Maseches Sanhedrin, it's a reference to Rav Huna. So Rav Huna is saying in the name of Rav, Halacha K'Rabbi Yossi Bandroigenis U'Baharkova. The halacha follows the opinion of Rabbi Yossi in the case of androgynous and the case of Harkova, which we mentioned has to do with grafting. Ushmul Omar Bekoishi Ubekiddush. The halacha will follow Rabbi Yossi, where he appears in the context of the rules of Koishi and Kiddush. The Gemara now explains what those are. Androgynous Ha Damoran. Here the Gemara saves ink because we have already discussed this. This is our Perek is dealing with the issue of the androgynous, that which we said, Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah, where we saw Rabbi Yossi, together with Rabbi Shimon, was of the opinion that an androgynous that marries a woman, and he is a, the androgynous himself is a kohen, enables her to eat from truma. And I know that we might sound a little repetitive, but in our previous shiur we mentioned that this was an indication that Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that an androgynous is a definite male. Harkava, Disnan. What's the topic of Harkava? So we said this has to do with the Shemitah year. And as you all probably know, the Shemitah, the sabbatical year in Jewish law, represents a year when we refrain and desist from almost all agricultural activities. The source says, Disnan, Ein Neitin, Ve'ein Mavrichin, Ve'ein Markivin, Erev Shvias, Pachos Mishloishim Yom Lifnei Rosh Hashanah. The sabbatical year sets in on the first of Tishrei, what on the day that we generally call Rosh Hashanah, but it's once every 7 years. So what, this source is telling us that one is not to plant saplings nor do havrocha, which is a form of extending a vine, and markivin is grafting. On Erev Shvias means the year before Shvias. It's the Shemitah, it's the sixth year of the seventh year cycle. One should not engage in these things within 30 days prior to Rosh Hashanah. According to Rashi, those 30 days have a status as if it's the Shemitah year itself. So therefore, all agricultural activity during those 30 days would be prohibited. Now, there's a discussion about what we just mentioned in the Tosfos, but for our purposes, we're going to just stick with Rashi's pshat for our shiur. So that those 30 days before Shvias are considered the Shemitah year itself. V'imnota v'hivrich v'hirkiv ya'akor. If a person was to do that during those 30 days, so he's violated the rules of Shemitah and he has to uproot that which he did. Now, there's a, and we should point out something else that Rashi says. It's known that there's a term klita. Klita means it takes hold, it takes root, or the grafting takes hold. In order for things to take hold, they don't do so, they don't take hold in less than 30 days. So if you were to graft or do these things within the 30 days before Shemitah, then technically speaking, it's taking hold on the Shemitah year itself. There's more to it on this than that which we just said, though. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Harkova Sheino Koletes B'Shloisha Yomim Shuv Eino Koletes. This will be explained later, but translated means any grafting that doesn't take hold within 3 days, it won't take hold. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omerim Shtei Shavos. Now we've underlined Rabbi Yossi's name because he's really the one we want to focus on. He says that for grafting to take hold, you need 2 weeks. The Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Rabo Baravua, Ledivrei HaOmer Shloishim, according to the Tanakama that said that you shall not do the grafting within 30 days, Tzorich Shloishim Ushloishim, you really need to do the grafting a minimum of 60 days before the Shemitah year. Now, as we said before, the 30 days prior to the Shemitah year is considered like the Shemitah year itself. The Tanakhama also says that in order for these procedures to take hold, to root, or to for the grafting to adhere, that itself requires 30 days. So in order for things to be done in a mutar, in a permissible fashion, you're going to have to see to it that the grafting is done a minimum of 60 days before the onset of the Shemitah year. Because if you do it 55 days before the Shemitah year, the grafting itself is going to take 30 days. That's going to put you into that 30-day pre-Shemitah year zone, which itself is considered like the Shemitah year. And we don't want agricultural activities or finalities taking place during that time. L'divrei ha'omer shloisha, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who said that in order for grafting to take hold, you need 3 days. You have to allow 3 days. Tzorich shloisha u'shloishim. You need 33 days before the onset of the Shemitah in order to do the grafting. You need 3 days for the taking hold. And then the 30 days, which itself is considered like the Shemitah year. L'divrei ha'omer shtei shabbosis, which is Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, as the opinion that says you need 2 weeks. Tzorech shtei shabbosos u'shloshim, which means you need to have 44 days before the Shemitah year as your last chance to do the harkova, the grafting. So up to this point, then we've seen Rav and the Amri Bei Rav presenting Rav as two areas where we paskin like Rabbi Yossi, even though there are other opinions on these given topics. In these topics of Androgynous and Harkova, we will follow Rabbi Yossi's opinion. Ushmul Omar B'Koshi V'Kiddush. Koshi, what's the case of Koshi? Disnan. Now we have a Tanaic source from Maseches Nida, and for the sake of simplicity, we're not going to get into all of the details. It's a fairly involved topic. Rashi does give a nice amount of background. I'm not sure if Rashi will be clear to those who haven't had a good background in learning Maseches Nida, but try it anyway. We mentioned before that Koshi has to do with a woman who's pregnant and her birth is kind of imminent. We're talking about a time period close to the end of her pregnancy. Koshi indicates birth pains. If she experiences blood sighting together with birth pains, and that situation continues up till the birth, the woman is considered tahora vis-a-vis the blood sightings that she had. She'll be Tamea Leda anyway. She's Tamea because of giving birth, but she's not considered what's called a Yoledes Bezov, which means a woman who gave birth in a situation that she was already Tamei. In a case like that, there are additional days of purification that would be necessary. So we're looking right now to, let's say, to minimize or maybe say maximize the amount of time that she can actually have blood sightings, as long as they are together with pain, and she will avoid being categorized as a Yoledes Bezov, as being Temeya as a result of female blood flows. The Gemara continues, Disnan Kamuye Kishuya, how long before the birth can she be considered not Temeya? The blood that she sees can be associated with the impending birth. Rabbi Meir Omer O Arboim O Chamishim Yom, even 40 or 50 days, up till 50 days before the birth, if she experiences blood sighting for a period of 50 days accompanied with birth pains, when she gives birth, she is not considered Temeya as a result of that blood that she had seen. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Daya Chadosha. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's enough that we give her a month. That's a literal translation. There's much more to that in understanding the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, but that's for another time. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Shimon, Oimrim, Ein Kishu Yoser Mishtei Shabbosos. And here, once again, we've underlined only Rabbi Yosi's name. He's the name we want to emphasize right now. Rabbi Yosi says that Kishui cannot be the basis of exempting the woman from Tuma for more than 2 weeks. That means that if she was seeing, let us say that you have a woman that was seeing blood 3 weeks before she gave birth. And during all those 3 weeks, she was also experiencing birth pains, and then eventually gave birth. Well, since it was for 3 weeks prior to the birth, she would be considered Temeya. In addition to Tumas Leida, she'd also be considered Yoledes Bezov. However, if the blood sightings along with the pain were experienced for no more than 2 weeks, which led up to the actual birth, she would be considered Tahora. Kiddush, Desnan. This has to do with the realm of Kilayim. The word Kiddush is an interesting word. It has almost an opposite connotation when you look at things superficially, etymologically, or philologically. When you look at things in a deeper way, you'll find it's actually there's one root meaning to all the different possibilities. But superficially, Kiddush is associated with sanctification. It's also associated with ruination. Technically speaking, Kiddush has to do with something that is separated. Now, separated could be for the good, it could be for the bad. In this case, we're looking at things, Kiddush in the negative sense, Kiddush in a kilayim, ruination sense. Disnan, ha-mesachich gifano agabi tvoso shel chavero. Mesachich is a word that might be familiar. The root of the word is familiar probably to many of you. You can see the word schach. Schach is the covering that we place over a sukkah, the branch covering over a sukkah. Here we're not talking about a sukkah, but we are talking about a vine that's growing from the ground, and you took the branches of the vine and placed them over your neighbor's grains. Hare ze kidesh v'chayev bachriyuso, divrei Rebbe Meir. By doing that, you have ruined his grains, and you are obligated to compensate him for that. That's chayev machriso. You have to compensate him. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Oimrim, and again we emphasize Shitas Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, along with Rabbi Shimon, do by the way note that in the last framed sources and the Mishnah as well, Rabbi Yossi was appearing with Rabbi Shimon. But our sukkah is focusing on Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi Shimon Oimrim, we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Ein Odom Oiser Dovar She'eno Shalo. You cannot ruin someone else's things. Now, there's a very interesting discussion that you find in the Tosfos at the top. What do you mean you don't ruin someone else's things? If I come along and throw a big hunk of meat into your pot of boiling milk, you're not going to be able to drink from the milk in which the meat was cooked. That's meat and milk. So we see that people prohibit other people's things. So Tosfos presents a rule, and that is that when the matter is something that is dependent on thought, for example, If I were to bow down to your animal in idolatrous worship, that would not make your animal a ne'evad. It wouldn't be considered halachically something that was worshipped, because my bowing down to it as an idol is all a matter of thought, that I am considering in my mind your animal to be an idol. Likewise, with regard to the topic of kilayim, without getting into details, the issue of kilayim is something that has a great amount of connection or dependency on a person's intentions. So since kilayim is a topic where human intention is a major factor, Rabbi Yossi says, you can't prohibit someone else's things. Now, as we said earlier, Rav presented two halachas, and Shmuel presented two halachas, of course, halachas of Rabbi Yossi. At this point, we want to know, what does each one do with regard to the others? Ibai alaho, ba'androgynous mali omar Shmuel. When we presented androgynous on Omer Aleph, we said that Rav held that we rule like Rabbi Yossi with regard to androgynous. Well, what does Shmuel say about that? Toshma, di Omar Shmuel, l'Rav Onan. Shmuel said to Rav Onan, Lesa lebraisa mekami masnisin. Shmuel said that we will reject the Braisa in favor of the Mishnah. So that would show that Shmuel holds, like Rav, that the Androgynous will be Machil Betruma. Arkova Mali Omar Shmuel. What does Shmuel say regarding the issue of Harkova, the issue of the grafting prior to the Shemitah year? Toshma, the Omar Le Shmuel Rav Onan, Tani, Kamando Omar Shloisha Ushloshim. Now that figure of Shloisha, 3 days, that was not like Rabbi Yossi. That was the opinion that we saw in the name of Rabbi Yehuda. So that on this score, Shmuel does not agree with Rav's ruling. Koshi and Kiddush, the next two diamonds, these were halachas that were presented in the name of Shmuel on Amud Aleph, so we want to know, what does Rav say about that? Koshi Mali Omar Rav, what does Rav say about the ruling regarding the number of days leading up to the birth, which had blood and pain? Teku, this is something that we don't have an answer for. And Kiddush Mali Omar Rav, what about the issue of the one fellow placing his vines over the grains of his neighbor? What does Rav say about that? Omar Rav Yosef, Toshma. So Rav Yosef resolves this by saying, come in here, Di Omar Rav Huna, Omar Rav, Ein Halocha Karebi Yosi. Rav Huna says that the halacha is not like that of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says that the owners of the vines is not accountable, so Rav Huna is saying that we're not going to rule like that. We're not going to exempt him. Omerle Abaye, my choses de samchis aha. Abaye asks Rav Yosef, why is it that you rely on this ruling, the ruling of Rav Huna? Why not rely on Rav Ado's presentation of Rav as saying that we do hold like Rav Yossi, that said Ein Odom Osir Dovar Sheino Shelo, that the fellow was exempt? So Rav Yosef answers Abaye, and he says that Amri Bei Rav Monu. Use the arrow, and you can go back to Omid Bey's Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, and you see that when we were presenting Rav and his rulings like Rabbi Yossi in Androgynous and Harkova, who introduced Rav? It was Amri Bei Rav that introduced that, and here we're asking, well, what does Rav hold regarding the other two halachas? Well, we're interested, let's say more specifically, in what is Amri Bei Rav's version of Rav hold regarding those other two halachas. So who is the Amri Bei Rav? Amri Bei Rav Monu, Rav Huna. It is Rav Huna. They're one and the same. Rav Huna Omar Ein Halacha. And it's Rav Huna that is the one that ruled the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi in the case of the Mesachik Kifano Gabi Tvosu Shechaveroi. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, you can see that we have highlighted with a geometric form the names Rabbi Yehuda and later Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Here they deal with the issue of the Tumtum, Shenikra Benimsa Zohar. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tumtum, Shenikra Benimsa Zohar. Lo yachloitz mipnei shuhu kisoris. We saw this in the Mishnah, daf pei aleph amud aleph. A tumtum, an individual whose organs of gender are covered over. They're covered over, meaning with some membrane or skin. And then it was torn open, and he was discovered to be a male. So the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah said that he is not to do chalitza. He is disqualified from chalitza, because he is considered a like a soros. A soros is someone who is incapable of procreation, and hence he's excluded from the realm of Yibum. Yibum and Chalitza is the realm where we want the surviving brother to marry and continue the name of his deceased brother through bearing children. But he is a soros, so he's disqualified from that. So we saw that Rabbi Yehuda says that a tumtum, even though he's discovered later to being a zohar, having the male organs underneath that membrane, nevertheless he does not do chalitza. Om Rabbi Ami, my Ovid lay Rabbi Yehuda. Well, Rabbi Yehuda, with his opinion, what is he going to do with the following story? Le tumtum de biri, the story of tumtum in biri, the osvua abe kurse v'ikra. He was placed on a stool, and the membrane tore open. The oiled sheva bonin, and this man eventually fathered seven children. If he fathered seven children, he can't call him a soros. A soros is someone who's sterile. The Gemara responds, Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Lei, Rabbi Yehuda will tell you, Chazor Abonov Me'ayin Haim. Check out carefully where his children really come from. In simpler words, his wife was fooling around with someone else on the side. So she was impregnated by another man or other men, maybe the community thinking it was the tumtum of Biri that impregnated her husband, but not so. So that Rabbi Yehuda maintains his position that a tumtum shenikra is in reality is sterile. Tanya, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda Omer, tumtum lo yachloitz, a tumtum should not participate in chalitza, shema yikra, and here we'll skip the bracketed section momentarily, the language contained therein is not accurate, and he says that a tumtum should not do chalitza because he might eventually might get torn open, in other words, the organs of gender might become exposed, the nimsa nekeva, and it'll turn out that he's actually a woman, and therefore his participation in chalitza, whereby his shoe would be removed, in effect it would be the shoe being removed from the foot of a woman, which is ridiculous. The im nimsa zohar, and if he turns out to be a male, shema yimsa sris chama, he might turn out to be a sris chama, someone who is sterile from birth, and also disqualify, and as such disqualified totally from the rules of Yibum and Chalitza. My Binai, what is the difference between Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda his father? In other words, you have Rabbi Yehuda saying that a tumtum shenikra should not do chalitza, and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda also says that a tumtum the shenikra shouldn't be doing chalitza. Omar Rava. So Rava explains, lifsoil b'mokim achin, velachloitz sheloi b'mokim achin, ika binayo. There are two situations. In order to appreciate this, we take a look at Rashi. Rashi that we're looking at is found further up in the narrow lines. Lifso b'mokem achim, im yesh achim shleimim imo. If you have several surviving brothers and other regular brothers that are with him. V'cholatz lo tumtum. And the tumtum is the one to do the chalitza with the deceased brother's widow. The Rabbi Yehuda d'Omar shu kesoris, according to Rabbi Yehuda that views the tumtum shenikra as a soris, machzik le besoris vadai, he's considered a certain soris, velo posla al achin, and as such, the fact that he did chalitza with her doesn't disqualify her from doing yibum with one of the other brothers. Umisya bemes, and she can therefore do yibum. Ula Rabbi Yosi shema kotani sveikahu. Rabbi Yosi used the word shema in his presentation, which indicates an element of doubt that maybe he is a sterile individual, maybe not. Maybe he is a regular guy. Upasla alo achim, and by his doing chalitza with her, it disqualifies the widow from doing yibum with the other, with any of the other brothers. Dilmo lav sorisu, the chalitza he, maybe he's not a soris, he's a healthy fellow, and his chalitza then has significance, thereby disqualifying her from yibum with any of the other brothers. V'lachloit shelo b'mokam achem, that's the other point of difference. Rashi continues, im ein shomach elohu, if there is only him, only the soris, this tumtum shenikra, l'Rabbi Yehuda lo baya chalitza. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no need for him to do chalitza whatsoever. L'Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda baya chalitza misafik. According to Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Yehuda, chalitza is required because there's the element of doubt that maybe he is qualified and eligible for yibum, and hence he can and should do chalitza in order to release her, the widow, to marry whomever she wants. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side. The topic heading reads Chiyuv al Shnei Mekomos Bandreginus. This is a point that we had mentioned in our previous year. This has to do with a with guilt of someone, of a man having relations with an androgynous. An androgynous is an individual that has both male and female characteristics. So, in addition to the orifice that a man has, a woman has an additional orifice called the female orifice. If a man would have intimacy with the androgynous, through which orifice is there guilt? So certainly through the orifice that is characteristic of another man, it would be two men, a homosexual relationship. What about through the female orifice that he possesses? Now we turn to the Gemara. There are three lines of names. Omar, Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, Omar Rabbi Abba, Achvod Rabbi Yehuda bar Zabdi, Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Androgynous Chayovin Olov Skilo Mishtei Mekomos. This is a point that we saw on Pei Beis Amid Beis as well, that a regular man that has relations, that inserts his own male organ into the androgynous through either one of the two orifices that he has, will result in stoning. Homosexual relations are not only deplorable, but they're abhorrent in the eyes of the Torah. And not only that, but it's considered one of the most severe offenses, as is illustrated by the fact that it carries with it the most severe capital punishment, namely stoning. So that, according to Rav, a regular man that has intimacy, sexual intercourse with an androgynous, in either one of the two orifices that he possesses, that will result in stoning. Meisvei, Rabbi Lezer Omar, androgynous chayavim lov skilo kibazochor. Rabbi Lezer says that relations with an androgynous would be considered like relations with a regular man. Vamed vamurim bezachrus shelo. That is, if the men are cohabiting as two regular men would. Aval benakvus shelo poter. Now, notice we dashed underline benakvus shelo poter. It means if the regular man inserted himself into the female orifice of the androgynous, there would be exemption. Well, that shows then you have a Tanaic source not like Rav. The Gemara says who the Omar ki hai tano. Rav adopts the position of another Tana, the Sanya Rabbi Simoi Omer androgynous chayev lov skilo mishtei mekomos, and we've dashed underlined this as well, showing that this is the basis of Rav's opinion. So Rav has a Tanaic source upon which to rely, namely Rabbi Simoi. Now the Gemara gets into sources. My time of the Rabbi Simoi. What is the basis of Rabbi Simoi? Omar Rava. Bar Hamduri Azbroli. Rava tells us that Bar Hamduri explained it to me. V'es Sochor lo Sishkav Mishkevei Isha. That's a posuk in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yudches, posuk Chof Beis. Generally speaking, this posuk is taken to be a reference to homosexual relations, but the phraseology of the posuk leaves room for additional drushes. So the Gemara analyzes, Bar Hamduri explains to Rava, Ezehu Zohar, Sheesh Bo Shnei Mishkavois. The pasuk speaks about relations with a zohar and uses the plural Mishkevei Isha, that he has two forms of entrance. So what kind of man has two entrance points? Heve Omer Ze Androgynous. So that would be the androgynous. So that, according to Reb Samoy, the pasuk is saying that a man that enters an androgynous in either one of his orifices will be chayav skila. Chayav means guilty of stoning. V'rabbonan, now the rabbonan who disagree with that, afagav disbe shnei mishkavos, even though he has two orifices, es zohar ksiv, the pasuk emphasizes the male aspect, that namely only in the male aspect and not the female orifice. For Rabbanan, Zohar Greda Mino Lahu, the Rabbanan who used this pasuk to address the issue of an androgynous and limiting the possibilities of offense with regard to an androgynous, where did the Rabbanan learn that there's a basic prohibition of two regular males cohabiting? The Gemara answers, Mi ve'es isha. The Pasuk mentions, actually, the beginning of the Pasuk says, ve'es zohar. So the V.S. clues him into that case as well. Isha shelo kedarka. Where do we learn in general arayas? Arayas are forbidden forms of intimacy with man and woman. Where do we learn that if you want to use an example, a brother having relations with his sister? But the brother has relations with his sister shelo kedarka, namely entrance to her not through the regular female canal or orifice of reproduction, but rather the other orifice. What is the source for a brother and sister, father and daughter, a son and mother, where the woman who is prohibited is entered by the man in the shelo kedarka fashion, the unusual, the non-regular fashion. Menolahu, from where do we know that? And so the Gemara answers, Mei Isha. The reading that we are adopting in the Gemara, you can see, is taken from the Bach in Os Beis. So from the word Isha in that pasuk, we learn this idea that the Shelo Kedarka Arayas violation is violated in the Shelo Kedarka form. I should say, even in the Shelo Kedarka form when dealing with a woman. Omar of Shizbi, Omar of Chista, Lo Lakol, Omar of Eliezer, Androgynous Zohar Ma'al Yehu. Even though Rabbi Eliezer said that relations with an androgynous is chayav skila, like relations with another man, it's not with regard to everything that an androgynous is considered a regular male. Shimata Omer Kain, if you were to say that Rabbi Eliezer views an androgynous as a regular male, you have androgynous appearing in the animal kingdom as well. B'mugdashim yikdash. in the case of sacrificing, dedicating sacrifices, an animal that has both genders would be capable of being sanctified as a sacrifice, and that's not so. So that if an androgynous were viewed as a regular male, so just like a regular male animal can be dedicated as a sacrifice, so to the androgynous, but yet we see that's not so. From where do we know that one cannot sanctify as a sacrifice an androgynous animal? The Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that deals with many different, exceptions to what would be a kosher and acceptable sacrifice. So the source reads, the Tanu Rabbanan, Hanirba v'amukze v'nevar v'esnan u'mechir v'tumtum v'androgynous. This source is actually dealing with bird sacrifices. Nirva is a bird that some man had intimacy with. Muktzah is an animal that was set aside to be offered to an idol. Vanevad is an animal, a bird in this case, that was worshipped. Esnan is a bird that was paid to a harlot for her services. Mechir would be a bird that was exchanged for a dog. The Tumtum v'androgynous, if its organs are either, its organs, gender organs are covered over, or it has dual gender organs. Now, a bird offering, when it's sacrificed, it is not slaughtered as one slaughters outside the Beis HaMikdash, but rather the Kohen's thumbnail is inserted into the back of its neck, and that's called Malika. When you're dealing with a regular, acceptable sacrifice, and Malika is done to it, a bird animal, if it's a sin offering, bird sin offering, the Kohen eats that. However, if it's an unacceptable bird offering, so then this Malika form of slaughtering is basically killing it. Killing it makes it into a nevela. A nevela is, in the case of birds, kosher variety birds, results in tumah. The person becomes tamei, and his clothing also become tamei as he is swallowing it. That's what metamin begonim abeis ablio means. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, tumtum v'androgynous ein metamin begonim abeis ablio. Rabbi Eliezer says that when it comes to these two cases, a tumtum v'androgynous, there is no problem in their serving as a proper bird offering, and the malika that is done is the proper sacrifice and slaughter of them. And hence there is no tumas begodim abeis habliya shohoi. Rabbi Elazar omer, kol mokom shenem ar zohar nekeva, where the Torah specifies gender by using the words either zohar male or nekeva female, ato motzi tumtum v'androgynous mibeinehem, you would exclude a tumtum and an androgynous. V'oif, however, when it comes to birds, hayovelo nemar bo zohar nekeva, the Torah does not use specific gender references with regard to bird offerings, neither male nor female. I atomotsi tumtum androgynous mibinehem, you will not exclude a tumtum nor an androgynous. So what is the point of this whole source? It is to show you that with regard to androgynous in general, Rebbe Elazar says an androgynous is the equivalent of a regular male. But when it comes to androgynous and bird offerings, the androgynous is considered something. Or let's rephrase that. When it comes to sacrifices, animal sacrifices, where gender is specified, so androgynous is excluded. So an androgynous is not viewed as a zohar, as an acceptable male animal offering. With regard to birds, so there's a different standard, because by birds, gender isn't a factor in the first place. But with regard to animal offerings, gender is stated, and by that having been stated, androgynous is excluded. Hence, an androgynous is not considered a zohar with regard to korbonus. Omer of Nachmar Yitzhok, af anan nami tanina. We have this taught as well in the following Tanaic source. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Hakilayim Utrefa. We're continuing, by the way, with the topic of sacrifices. And it says in this source that a Kilayim Trefa v'yotzidofim tumtum v'adreganis loy kedoshim v'lo mekachim. You see a list of different type situations of animals that would not be acceptable as sacrifices. Kilayim is where a sheep and goat mate and produce a mixed breed animal. Trefa is an animal that has some type of, I'll say, organ defect or limb defect, rendering it a trefa. The Yotze Dofen is a cesarean birth animal. Tumtum and Androgynous, we already have discussed. They are lo kedoshim v'lo mekachim. The Omar Shmuel, lo kedoshim b'tmura v'lo mekachim b'oise tmura. Shma mina. Now, what is Shmuel telling us? That means lo kedoshim b'tmura would mean that if I were to take a regular sacrifice and attempt to replicate its sanctity onto one of these, it would not take hold. Whereas in the case of a regular chulin animal, regular healthy, normal, common animal, or even if it's blemished, so tamura will take hold, but not in the case of these items. And not only that, but they, a kilayim, a trefa, a tzedof, and these things cannot generate tamura either from them to replicate their sanctity onto something else. Now, you might ask, if they can't become sanctified, so how do they gain sanctity in the first place? So Rashi addresses that particular topic. But what's clear from here is that you can see you see androgynous mentioned, and they do not become sanctified, indicating that they are not considered a regular zohar. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Chayovin Olov Skila Kezohar, a man that has intimacy with an androgynous will be punishable by stoning as if he had relations with another male. Tanya Omar, Rebbe, Kishalachti Lumoy Torah Eitzel Rebbe Elozer Ben Shamua. When I, says Rebbe, went to learn Torah by Rebbe Elozer Ben Shamua, Chibru Olai Talmidov Ketarnagolim Shel Beis Bukya. Chibru means they gathered together, his students gathered together upon me, like chickens of Beis Bukya. Rashi says, "Shel Beis Bukya b'kiyim v'charif v'imanichim tarnagol nochri b'neim." It's a type of their. Apparently, these are chickens that don't allow strangers amongst them. So these students were very sharp and analytical, and didn't have too much patience for outsiders coming in. That velohi nichuni lilmoid elodover echod the Mishnah Seinu, and they didn't leave me to learn from him anything other than one point in our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer, androgynous chayovin olav skila kezachar. That very point is what Rebbe learned from Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua. As you can see, with this we come to the end of the eighth perek of Yevamos Perek Ha'orel. And Mirtz Hashem, next time we'll start the ninth perek. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.